I'm Bob Ferguson. Today, I'm going to be guest hosting the right-wing mega political podcast, Undivided. Coming up, I'm going to talk about the 100 times I sued the Trump administration, even though at night I have fantasies about him because I'm utterly obsessed with the former president. And then I'm going to talk about how I'm misrepresenting my opponent's record on abortion to achieve my other fantasy of being governor. And then I'm going to reminisce about the time I asked a secretary of state of my own political party to violate election law, and about the time that I politically prosecuted three police officers for murder to further my political career. Now, I don't know why anyone would want to give $5 to a right-wing nut job like Brandy Cruz, but I guess if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that at undividedpod.com, although I think a better use of that money would be bribing voters with $5 chicken checks. Enjoy the show. Hosting a podcast is totally beneath me. I'm an Ivy League graduate. So to make it more difficult for myself, I'm going to play myself in a game of chess while I host this stupid podcast. Hello, everyone. I can't do a Bob Ferguson voice. Not that that's really a Bob Ferguson voice.
Does he have a voice? I don't know.
Does he have a voice? I don't know. Look, I feel like I should, you know what I should have worn in my Bob Ferguson costume? A Dave Reichert for governor pin.
Ooh.
Should have done it. Good. I got my chess set. I today am dressed as a power hungry attorney general, and all of you are just pawns in my pursuit of power. You know the really wonderful thing about our costumes today before Nicole comes on camera? And a lot of you got this right. My hint was a pawn piece, and there were at least 10 people who guessed Bob Ferguson. So as promised, the first 10, you're going to get an email from us, and you're going to get a piece of our swag for free when we launch our new collection in the new year. Now, Nicole and I did not coordinate. No coordination. Mm-mm. We came up with our outfits completely independently.
And did not tell each other.
So you can imagine how thrilled I was when it turned out that our costumes coordinated. Nicole, are you ready for your big reveal?
I'm ready.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes. Nicole's costume. A dead person who received a chicken check from Bob Ferguson. Oh my God, it's good. It's good. I love it. I was like, that is genius. There were some people who said chicken check.
No, people said chicken.
Chicken.
Yeah.
A dead person who got a chicken check from Bob Ferguson. You're welcome. You didn't appreciate my chicken check? Rude. You know what?
As a dead person, I appreciated it.
Before we get to the very important news content we have, Nicole and I yesterday, we guessed what each other would be. Let's see how far off we were, shall we? Okay, let's see. So this is yours.
Don't turn your head too far to the side. Your bun shows.
Nicole guessed I would be Jack King Golf. Oh my God, that would have been such a good costume. Right? The orgasmic drag king, Jack King Golf. Now, I'm pretty proud of myself. I didn't get it 100% right, but I said Nicole's costume is a chicken check.
You did.
I swear to God, you were just a dead person getting a chicken check. So I don't know. That's pretty good.
That is really good. Nice work.
I'm a genius.
Good.
Of course, I'm a genius. I'm also a chess grandmaster and an Ivy
League. I can't believe you guessed that.
Attorney. So, all right. No, I can't be in character as Bob Ferguson for the rest of the show. That's too hard. And honestly, I'm pretty soul sucking.
And
did you see my good contours? I've got my
face looks very thin with your contour there.
Are you trying to say it usually doesn't look thin?
Well, Bob Ferguson thin.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, this is too much fun. Congratulations for those who guessed it appropriately.
I could show a full picture. You want to see our full costume, our little picture that we took?
Sure.
And let's see.
And then we got to get to the news. People are gonna be like, okay, I'm done with this.
Pretty impressive. Okay, there it is.
Oh, that's good. Gotta love it. I'll put that one out on social. All right. I'm Brandi Cruz, dressed as Bob Ferguson. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate all of you, especially our undivided subscribers during this busy, busy election year. Speaking of, one of the most important races happening that's also the most difficult for voters to sift through is the open seat for state Supreme Court. Why is it difficult? Well, there's not a little letter next to the name, so you can't just default and say, oh, R or the D. It is technically supposed to be a nonpartisan race. So the two candidates that are on your ballot are Dave Larson and Sal Mungia. So they're running for state Supreme Court. I've already endorsed Dave Larson, so you know where I sit on this. And one of the reasons is he's the only one who's ever been a judge. And I don't know, call me crazy, but if you're talking about a state Supreme Court justice, I'd like to have someone who's actually been a judge before. And he's also just a very reasonable guy, not hyper partisan or political. On the other hand, Mungia is absolutely lockstep with the Democratic Party. There's a reason why the other justices want Mungia on the court. They don't want any dissent, right? So they want someone who agrees with them and who's going to agree with their decisions. And he also was just on Facebook bragging about the fact that Jay Inslee endorsed him. Here's what Sal Mungia wrote on Facebook. Thank you, Governor Inslee, for endorsing my campaign. Your support is a tremendous honor and a strong testament to our shared vision for a better future. I'm looking forward to working together in a positive to positively impact our community, which is terrifying to me. The courts, especially the state Supreme Court, they're supposed to be a check on people like Governor Inslee. Am I really going to believe that Sal Mungia, who's like, oh, yay, but, you know, the current governor supports me and I'm lockstep with Democrats and I want to work together toward our shared vision for a better future? No, you're supposed to be a check on the things they do. Why would you brag about getting an endorsement from the sitting governor? That's so counterintuitive. King 5 News did an interview with Sal Mungia and both candidates, but I just want to play a clip where they asked him about this, you know, proactive in a nonpartisan race, alignment with the Democratic Party.
While it's a nonpartisan position, Mungia is proud to have the support of Governor Inslee and the Democratic Party. Does that mean he'd be an ally to Democrats if elected?
I'm surprised. You could actually ask that question with a straight face. I mean, that was pretty good. And you know the answer is no, right? I mean, my whole position as a lawyer has always been to represent my clients. As a judge, I will remain neutral. I have to do that.
How annoying. Sorry, my Bob Ferguson wig is really itchy. How annoying of an answer is that? To say, oh, I'm surprised you could ask that with a straight face. Like, is that the guy you really want on the Supreme Court? That's a very valid question to ask a potential Supreme Court justice. Can you remain neutral given the fact that a lot of these challenges are going to come from policies of the Democratic Party and the governor's office, and you're in here bragging about being in line with them and happy to get the support of the governor to pursue a shared agenda? It's a very legitimate question, and just that response alone is enough for me to say don't vote for the guy. But I have never seen efforts like this to make a race partisan that's supposed to be nonpartisan. So there was this op-ed in The Urbanist, which is kind of an independent Seattle media blog thing, and it was so unhinged. I can't read the whole thing to you, but I would really encourage you to go read it. Nobody really reads The Urbanist, but I think the people who do are probably already going to vote for Sal. But this just shows like the lengths they're willing to go to try to keep this seat a progressive seat, because they know the power of the state Supreme Court. And even though it is decidedly in favor of progressives, they care so much about maintaining and building and consolidating power that they're going to go to great lengths to make sure they get their guy on the Supreme Court. So this is from The Urbanist. Op-ed, don't let billionaires buy Washington's Supreme Court. Vote Mungia. Okay. And the op-ed, by the way, was written by a public defender named Austin Fields. That gives you a little idea. I could not believe the number of buzzwords in this story designed to scare voters away from Dave Larson, who's such a moderate, reasonable guy who hasn't been out there campaigning as a Republican or anything like that. Let me just read a little bit of this to you, because it also mentions me. Washington voters might face a few tough choices this election season, but there's only one choice for state Supreme Court, Sal Mungia. Mungia's opponent, Dave Larson, is running as an experienced moderate, but he's a Trojan horse for extremist, anti-democratic billionaires. If he wins or even comes close, those billionaires will keep trying to buy our court, just as they've bought others. Vote Mungia. Larson's campaign is supported by a dark money network managed by wealthy out-of-state extremists. The network centers on Project 42, an umbrella group created by California oligarch Brian Haywood to funnel corporate dark money to seemingly independent extremist organizations like the Washington Policy Center. Project 42 has cultivated ties with extremists both in and outside of Washington, including disgraced Wisconsinite Scott Walker and Trump-supporting internet pundit Brandi Cruz. Also under Project 42's umbrella, Let's Go Washington, the campaign finance law violating political action committee backing urbanist opposed initiatives that would reduce billionaires' taxes, cut billions in school funding, and promote climate change. I mean, can you even, I would have to try to fit that many scary buzzwords into a single story. And it goes on from there. I'm not going to read all of this. Just a few more of the buzzwords in this article over and over. Wealthy. Talk about Larson's campaign is the latest step in billionaires' multi-decade plan to rig the legal system, buying state courts, is a facet of the oligarch legal crusade. You guys, this stuff is insane. And I would also note that headline, "Don't Let Billionaires Buy Washington's Supreme Court." Dave Larson has raised far less money than Sal Mungia. I just looked at the PDC. Sal Mungia is outraising and outspending him times three. And I couldn't identify a single actual billionaire who's donated to Dave Larson's campaign. So, like, I get it that op-eds are opinions, but shouldn't they at least be fact-checked? I mean, when I used to write op-eds for the Seattle Times, they'd still fact-check them. Your opinion still had to be based in reality. And so I'm going to send a, not that the urbanist cares, but a email to them asking, like, hey, I know it's an op-ed, but did you guys fact-check it? Or is he just allowed to tie Dave Larson to people he's not tied to in any real form or fashion and say that billionaires are trying to buy this seat when no billionaires have donated to his campaign and acting like he's being funded by ultra wealthy people when he's raised far less money than the Democrat aligned opponent. It's all just so dishonest. So anyway, we thought we'd have Dave Larson, candidate for state Supreme Court, on the show today to discuss. Judge Larson, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, are you sure you want to be on with a Trump-supporting internet pundit?
Who said that? Is that you?
The Urbanist says you have ties to Trump-supporting internet pundit Brandi Cruz. I wasn't aware we had ties. Do we have ties?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think, you know, there's a saying among trial lawyers. Those, if you have good facts, pound on the facts. If you have good law, pound on the law. If you have neither, pound on the table. Yeah. And the problem is they don't even have a table to pound on. They're trying to flail around and attack me because they want to mislead voters. And that's to me with the kind of campaign I've run where I've really worked hard to reach out to both sides, really acquired some really balanced endorsements. To have people resort to that, and it's just clear indication that they want a stranglehold on the judiciary, they want to use the judiciary for political purposes, they want the judiciary to do their bidding, and it just shouldn't be acceptable to the voters of our state.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to talk about that have come out, but a few of the things you just mentioned. You know, your opponent has the endorsement of Jay Inslee. He pushed that out. And he said, "Thank you, Governor Inslee, for endorsing my campaign. Your support is a tremendous honor and a strong testament to our shared vision for a better future. I look forward to working together to positively impact our community." And one of the things that strikes me about that is, like, the judiciary is supposed to be a check on people like the governor. So here it's like, no, we're working together. We have a shared vision. So that worries me.
Well, when we went to endorsement interviews with Democrats, he would tell them that they shared their values. I don't think I can ethically do that as a judge. In fact, not just ethically, but from optics and everything else. I've never told a Republican I share their values. Anytime you see me talking, I say I cannot make political promises. All I can do is promise to follow my oath. That's all I can do. And so when somebody looks at, well, he's got all these Democratic endorsements. Well, the problem is that for judicial candidates to tell people they share their values and to get those endorsements, and then not reach out to Republicans at all, which is what my opponent didn't, that may be an indication he wants the judiciary to be partisan too. And I'm trying to get the politics and partisanship out of it.
One of these, there's this article written in The Urbanist, which, no, don't worry, nobody reads The Urbanist. I was only alerted to it because I have my Google alert set to if somebody mentions me in an article. that I could find out what they said about me. So this alerted me.
Right.
But it says, so they're supporting, it's like an op-ed. They're supporting your opponent and say that he's backed by, they're saying this is a positive thing. Backed by racial justice groups, unions, and other organizations fighting for a more just economy. Do you believe it's the job of a Supreme Court justice to fight for a more just economy?
No. No, because that's a legislative function, gubernatorial function, judicial function is not to do that. I think a fair and just judicial system is well within the purview of the courts, well within separation of powers. And I've worked very diligently to actually establish a fair and just system. And in fact, I'm endorsed by the president of the NAACP of Washington, Oregon, Alaska. I'm also endorsed by Washington Council of Police and Sheriffs, which shows, again, my balance of you have two sides that can't agree on anything, but they can agree on me. And that what does that show about? And I don't mean to seem, it's just frustrating when you really try hard to just be a judicial candidate in the cleanest way possible, and then to have this partisan stuff be thrown at you at the last minute to try to mislead the voters is just, it's unnerving, but at the same time, I'm glad I ran. I'm glad I'm continuing to run because this is exactly the type of stuff I'm trying to get rid of. And I think they expose themselves for what they truly are, which is folks that want the judiciary to be partisan and to be a political arm of whatever interest group they represent.
Yeah, I mean, like an extension of the governor's office. It's, you know, this Urbanist article is just, it's interesting to me because I've never seen, and you know I've been covering politics in the state for a long time, I've never seen an article with this many like buzzwords used against a candidate. I mean, you name it. They're throwing it in there against you, saying that you're pretending to be this moderate. And the headline of it, I wanted you to respond to. It says, don't let billionaires buy Washington's Supreme Court. Vote Mungia. Are billionaires funding your campaign? Because I was looking on the PDC, and it's kind of weird because your opponents raised three times more money than you.
Yes, exactly. And I wish I knew where that billionaire's money was going. But the point is that his campaign contributions come mostly directly from people that have a direct interest in the outcome of cases in the judicial system. If you look at mine, it's from people, everyday people. There's some lawyers in there, maybe one or two judges. But ultimately, it's from folks that just want a fair and just system. And, you know, the other thing, too, this concept that somebody's running my campaign. If you work with me 5 minutes, you know that's impossible to sway me whatsoever in terms of my integrity, what I value. Now I have open mind, but it's my decision, not the decision of anybody else. And I control my campaign because ethically I'm responsible to do that. Nobody else controls my campaign. Nobody else manages my campaign other than me.
Yeah. Well, and it's just when you just look at it and you look at the numbers, it's obviously a lie. But we've seen this kind of used, and it's a scare tactic, right? Like, oh, big, scary, rich people supporting this person, so they must be bad. But not only has he raised far more money than you, I didn't find any billionaires in your donor list. Am I missing any billionaires?
No. So, no. The thing is I don't really watch who's donated to me. Yeah. Judicial candidates, we can't ask for money.
Yeah.
And we have a finance committee that does that on my behalf. And so, and the way the judicial rules work is if somebody donated to me and their case is before me, one of the lawyers can object and I can make a decision whether I should hear the case. There's a safety valve for that, built into the system. And so The sad thing about the person that wrote it wasn't the Urbanist itself. It was a person outside of it. It's the same one.
Yeah, Austin Field.
He's a public defender that's never met me, to my knowledge, and never talked to me. Yet he made these assertions about my role with therapeutic courts that are just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, anybody that's in the judiciary knows that my paper in 2019 resulted in $30 million in funding coming to the courts of limited jurisdiction, that my work with therapeutic courts, my work with improving the courts is the Council on Independent Courts was created because of my work with helping courts across the state when judicial independence is threatened. So and I got the President's Award for my Judges Association in 2018 for doing that. And so this notion that this person has never met me to spew this kind of stuff that's untrue and reckless. It's just, it's heartbreaking, especially when somebody within a system that's supposed to be designed to love the truth, to love justice, for that person to write something like that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, they're clearly trying to make it partisan because they believe if, you know, they can get it out there that like, oh, your opponent is the one that Democrats support because there's no letter next to your name, that that would make it easier for him to win or something. But it's like, for instance, they go to great lengths to tie you to Brian Haywood, you know, as they spend millions in other things vilifying Brian Haywood, the backer of the initiatives on TV. I looked, Brian Haywood hasn't donated to your campaign. I didn't see a donation there from Brian or from his wife. So I'm so confused as to what they're trying to paint there. But you know, that being said, it shows to me that they're worried, right? There's been a little bit of polling out in this race that shows you ahead of your opponent, but the vast majority of voters are undecided. And that doesn't surprise me in a race like this. Judicial races don't get a lot of attention on the news. It's a nonpartisan race. So if they default to vote for one party or the other, this makes it harder to do that. So what are you doing in these last few days, Judge, to try to reach those undecided voters and convince them that you are someone who's going to look at the letter of the law?
With the limited money we're able to raise, we're able to send a mailer out, we're sending texts, appearing on shows like yours. And you know, the thing is, I'd much rather be talking about the positive reasons why I'm running and the things that we can do in the judiciary to make our communities better, to help save lives, because there are things we can do. And what's happened, and the reason I'm running, is the Supreme Court has some priorities. And they pursue those priorities with very much with zeal that affect the way we run our courts. But they've been silent when it comes to their what's happening in our communities with addiction and mental illness. And there needs to be that leadership on that court to deal with that. And I've been very frustrated as a trial judge watching us flounder around in the trial courts, doing our best, but we're keep pushing people back and forth because we have no strategy. And that's one of the big reasons I'm running, is because I've worked with the legislature. In fact, a pilot project is formed based on an idea that I've had about regional resource networks. There has to be early intervention. There's all kinds of things we should be talking about rather than making up stories about the demons that are going to that supposedly run my campaign. And this is that's what's more heartbreaking, is that people deserve better when it comes to actually listening to what the issues are. And the Blake case we've talked about before resulted in our whole state being put on its head because five justices wanted to overturn our drug statute that had been upheld twice before and came up with arguments the lawyers didn't. Why aren't we talking about those issues? Why are we talking about somebody that hypothetically is because they want to take the attention off those issues because they know their vulnerabilities?
Yeah, well, you see, that's a common tactic. I mean, you see it in other races, too, where it's about vilifying and scaring. It's not about the issues. It's about how scary and extreme can we make the other candidate look to try to convince the undecideds to go in our direction.
Yeah, and then my opponents, and he's very proud of the fact that he's endorsed by 8 of the 9 justices. And I was asked about that this morning in a different interview about that. And I said, well, it's really what the campaign's about. It's the people want to select somebody the justices want or somebody the people need. I want to be the person the people need. That's what I want to be. And that's what I hope I've been as a trial judge, and I will continue to be as a justice. I'm not just going to occupy a seat on the Supreme Court. I'm not doing it for my ego. I was going to retire next year, but this is too important. There's too many people that are suffering because we don't have a plan, because we are silent and we're deciding cases that are actually undermining us in the trial courts. So there are important issues that are being overlooked while people are throwing mud.
Yeah. Judge Larson, can you make your final pitch to undecided voters who might watch this and haven't made up their minds in your race yet?
Well, I think it's just, I want to be on the Supreme Court, not just to be on the court. I want to have a positive impact about how our system of justice works. You know, dignity and respect, as we talked in the first time you interviewed me, dignity and respect are as important to us as eating, breathing, and sleeping. And we have to have a system that focuses on delivering that. We can do so much more in the judiciary if we change our focus and change how we operate to do things more to serve people than we are now. I also want to help us govern ourselves better overall. My degree is in public administration. I'm a student of government, and we're governing ourselves wrong. That's why people feel the way they do. We're not doing it the right way. And it's about, we've turned it into about power and control when it should be about responsibility and duty. I took this job as a municipal court judge, even though I was at a large law firm, happy, but I took it out of sense of duty to my community because the court was in trouble. It's one of the most eye-opening things I've ever done and why I want to fight even harder to make sure our system of justice works for our communities and our people. And right now that voice isn't on the court. And that's why it's so important that I be that person that the people need. That's what I want to hold myself to, and I want people to hold me to, is be the justice that the people need, not the justice that the justices want.
All right, Judge Dave Larson, he's on your ballot, everyone. Good luck to you on Tuesday.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a big one. And again, a tough one. There was the polling where it's like most people are undecided because it's not as easy as saying D or R. The other race that you're not going to see that designation next to is also very important, and that's the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. We need to fix our public school system. So David Olson really is the only choice. I mean, Chris Reykdal's not an option. He's been OSPI. He's been the superintendent for 8 years. Test scores are down, enrollment is down, the public school system's in a state of disarray. We cannot continue to elect the same people who are ruining our state and our systems, like our education system. So those are two big ones, and because you guys are so politically aware, obviously, you watch this show, you're involved politically. Those are the two that you really need to talk to your friends and family about and say, hey, you might have seen these two races, they don't have a designation next to them, here's who I'm supporting and why. So those are two really important races, and it's easy because they're both Dave Larson, David Olson. Please talk to friends and family about that who haven't got their ballots in yet. All right, we continue to put out in-depth interviews with 2024 candidates. There are hours of free interviews, no paywall, with candidates this cycle. If you want to, if you're undecided on some and want to go check out and see if we've done an interview, we just dropped an interview this morning with someone who has become a friend of the show, Jaskaran Singh. So you know Jaskaran because we covered his ordeal as a landlord quite extensively this year. He's got a guy who's living in a rental home of his for more than 2 years and has not paid rent. And he hasn't got a court date until 2025 to be able to try to evict him. It's just insane. So that experience spurred Jaskaran Singh to run for state senate in the 41st legislative district. And as a fairly new American citizen, as he's been out, one of the things he's been trying to do as he's been doorbelling is reach other immigrants like himself. And what he's found is that their values tend to align more with the Republican Party than the Democratic Party.
Do the doorbelling, if an immigrant just like me comes out, I ask the same question. Why you came to this country, said, public safety, law and order, and the good education of our kids. I said, that's a platform I run for.
Yeah.
We need equality. We came in this country for equality, for justice, law and order. Like a lot of public forums, local candidates, they start their probably they said, we are raised in the middle class family. But middle class in U.S. is really, you are really, when you line 40 years ago, super rich compared to what the world was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and America's middle class today is different than
what it was 40 years ago.
And middle class in other areas. Like, yes. You know, being middle class in India or middle class, you know, elsewhere, China, Japan, South America, that's a very different thing than being middle class in the United States. Yeah.
People with really a lot of money around the world, they want to come because of freedom, law and order, equality.
Yeah.
Because we feel safe here. The voices are heard. First Amendment. Freedom of speech and religion. That's where I stand for. Yeah. That's why I love this country.
Well, we have such a diverse state. And if the Republican Party, I think, would, and I think they're starting to, make sure they have a diverse set of candidates that can reach out to communities. We just talked to Sam Sim yesterday, who I know that you know. And he's, you know, helping them make connections with the Asian American community. I think doing that is really critical.
Yes.
But it's also a smart move politically. Like, that's a huge voting base to reach.
Yes. Yeah, it should be gone. Like basis, I think in this country, if we can remove the color-based politics, identity-based politics, we are a great nation. Still great nation. Whole world is looking at us. We all should be proud of it. We have abundance in this country. We have enough opportunity. We need a responsible citizen who can contribute and be proud who they are.
Again, that's Jaskaran Singh. He is a candidate for state senate in the 41st legislative district. Our entire interview is up now. No paywall over on Patreon and Locals. You can access it at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and watch hours of in-depth interviews with 2024 candidates. Again, you don't have to be a subscriber to watch any of them. None of them are behind a paywall, so check them out. All right, coming up next, we've got the Fife police chief joining us to talk about their concerns over dangerous juvenile suspects not being booked into the juvenile detention facility in Pierce County. It's become quite a problem. Bob, maybe Bob Ferguson should look into that and care about public safety. I'm Bob Ferguson. Oh, no, I don't care about any of that. Totally irrelevant. I'm going to just pretend to be the public safety candidate long enough to get into the governor's office. And then after that, I'll go back to my old ways of not caring at all. All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. The insurance industry is crazy right now. I mean, you've probably experienced it. Either you're getting renewal statements that are just through the roof, or you file a claim and you're dropped. So you need someone to help you navigate this market. Don't do it on your own. First Mark Challenge, it entails them talking to you about your current insurance. They go over your insurance needs, and then they go out, takes them a few days, they shop the market for you, and they come back with their recommendations. For Mike and I, we were underinsured, and so we were kind of worried going into it, like, oh God, we're going to, you know, do the First Mark Challenge, and they're going to come back and say, well, you need all this additional insurance, it's going to cost you more money. Well, we did get additional insurance, but it didn't cost us anything more because we were paying way too much for the insurance we already had. We have so many First Mark success stories. Tanya said that she went with First Mark when she bought a coffee cafe in Long Beach. It's called Kraken Cafe, by the way, if you want to go visit Tanya. She said it was the best choice we made. Michelle said that she and her husband got a renewal from their existing provider for the next 6 months. It went from $3,000 to $8,000. So that was the nexus for them to reach out to First Mark Insurance. They said Brad helped them save more than 50%, and now they can continue their discussions about getting a travel trailer. So don't navigate the complex world of insurance on your own. The First Mark Challenge costs nothing, and you never pay First Mark Insurance a dime for their services. It really is a no-brainer. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, on the show yesterday, we talked about this letter that was sent out, and it's really kind of an open letter, I think, to the community to let them know what's going on. It was from the Pierce County Police Chiefs. So all the police chiefs who represent cities in Pierce County sent this out, expressing their frustration with the fact that they have some juvenile offenders who they arrest for pretty serious, sometimes violent crimes, and the jail won't book them. The juvenile detention center called Reman Hall there won't book them in. And they say they have a policy against booking juveniles for misdemeanor crimes, even if that misdemeanor crime is a domestic violence assault. So Fife Police Chief Pete Fisher says that one of the things that led up to this letter is a case that they had, where they had a juvenile offender who committed a domestic violence assault against their father. And we know how serious, when I used to cover crime and justice, domestic violence calls were some of the most dangerous calls police could respond to. And often domestic violence can lead to things like murder. And so it's important to separate the parties. But when it's a misdemeanor, these cops, they're just like, what do we do? Because they're not going to be booked into jail. So it's been this whole ordeal, and it's part of this crumbling justice system for juvenile offenders. We've talked about it so much. I mean, you've got young kids committing adult-sized crimes, and then there isn't the punishment and the accountability on the back end. So Fife Police Chief Pete Fisher was nice enough to join us today to talk about it. Chief Fisher, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you're amongst those who are speaking out about this issue, because we've really seen it take a turn, and I'm worried. I don't know how we're going to improve the situation. So just generally speaking, in your city, what kind of crimes are you seeing juveniles involved in?
I think we're fairly fortunate. Obviously, we do have juvenile crime, but that tends to be on the lower side for us. Unfortunately, this is just our turn in the bucket, so to speak, where jurisdictions throughout Pierce County have faced this for months and probably over a year. We've been trying to address this with Reman Hall with no results.
Yeah. So Reman Hall is what?
Reman Hall is the juvenile detention center here in Pierce County.
Yeah. And so describe the issue that you're having, because this relates to, I mean, there's issues across Pierce County. We've had several law enforcement partners on to talk about the juvenile crime crisis. But your frustration has to do specifically with a case involving a 17-year-old.
It does. Our most recent case, we've had two of these. Mm-hmm. Our most recent case was a 17-year-old that assaulted dad, punched holes in the wall, took the phone away, keeping him from calling 911. Wow. All misdemeanor level crimes, but I would say violent. They're physical crimes of physical violence against another. And so our sergeant called Raymond Hall, asked to book them. They said, no, they're only booking for felonies. It brought to my attention because they had concerns that if they left the juvenile on scene, that there'd be further assaults or escalation of violence, which I think is probably a smart assessment on their part. And so I called Raymond Hall directly, had a conversation with them, and they said, no, we're not booking for misdemeanors. And so we were concerned enough at that point to reach out to the prosecuting attorney's office to see if they could plead our case for us. And as you can see from the email, they got the same response from Raymond Hall that we did, that they don't book juveniles for misdemeanors. And what's even more frustrating is their response last night, when this was brought to their attention, they said, well, Fife didn't provide police reports or provide us for enough information to do our override procedures. Well, the sergeant called, I called, the prosecuting attorney's office called. We provide the reports to the prosecutor as soon as they ask for them. I'm at a total loss to know what we could have done more for them to change their mind, saying they don't book under those circumstances. In this case, we had to release the juvenile to their mom. The mom got a hotel room for the juvenile so he wouldn't be at home with the dad. That is not a position we want family members to be in. And I definitely do not want our police officers being put in that impossible decision of having to make that decision themselves because of a poor policy decision.
Well, my understanding is with domestic violence cases, isn't it the law that someone has to be booked? Is that just for adults? And why would the adult, why, if that's the case, and please correct me if I'm mischaracterizing, why would it be different for a juvenile who committed the same kind of crime?
So that's an actually interesting question. When you look at the mandatory arrest law, it states that the suspect has to be 18 or older for it to be a mandatory arrest. So there's still discretion when we're talking about juvenile offenders in regards to domestic violence crimes. I don't think that's a great policy decision, right? We have a mandatory arrest in the state to ensure that there's separation between the victim and offender, and there's a cooling off period. And those are for adults. So if our juveniles whose minds are not fully developed are prone to make emotional decisions, wouldn't it make sense that they have that same cooling off period?
You know, 100%. I'm not trying to link the two because I don't know. I mean, you described what the 17-year-old did, but we just had a case with a 15-year-old who killed his whole family. So, I mean, juveniles, I'm not saying that this 17-year-old's capable of that. But as you said, with juveniles, I mean, you know, they can commit very serious adult crimes and a cooling off period just makes sense. So who makes the ultimate decision at Raymond Hall about what their policy will be? Whose policy is that and who decides it?
I don't have a good answer for that. I do know, and I think this is positive, that based on our position and the media attention we're getting, I do have a meeting tomorrow morning now with the presiding judge. And so that's a question I'm going to ask. It seems, I'm going to use the flyer I'm seeing in the back of the computer, a common sense policy decision that juveniles that commit crimes of violence, that make threats of physical violence, should be detained in the juvenile detention facility. Officers should not be forced to make decisions on what to do with juveniles when they're refused to be booked for those types of crimes.
Right. And I mean, not every family could afford to put their kid up in a hotel to keep him away from their dad or whatever family member it is. So the likelihood they might just head back. But just generally, I mean, it's not just the DV cases that we've seen. We've seen a lot of judges who are really hesitant during first appearances, even when someone is booked, to hold a juvenile, to give a juvenile any amount of bail on a, you know, on a promise to appear or anything like that. Have you guys witnessed that as well in the court system, that that juveniles are just really being treated completely differently?
It's funny you should say that. I talked about this being our second case. Our mm-hmm. first case where they refused to book a juvenile DV suspect was in January. We had an officer arrest a 16-year-old female for punching mom in the face, scratching her. And she happened to be on electronic home monitoring for a robbery charge, and they wouldn't take her. And so that's our experience with wow. Raymond Hall. And we've tried a number of times, myself, as part of the Pierce County Police Chiefs Association, to have conversations with our prosecutor, Raymond Hall, to fix what I think is a broken system. If you are making officers make decisions like this in the field, it's broken. They exist to make sure that these types of people are in custody so there are not further assaults or further violence or escalating violence.
Just so I heard that correctly, the juvenile young female, she had electronic home monitoring for an ongoing robbery case.
Correct.
And they wouldn't make an exception for her when she committed a DUI.
Correct. That's correct.
Doesn't that open the city up to liability? I don't know if you can answer that, but if you don't arrest someone, they just committed a DV and they get sent back home and hurt someone, isn't the city liable for that in some form or fashion?
Again, I think that's our concern, is they're going to argue that you had a responsibility, that you were dealing with them, they committed a crime, you should have taken them in custody. And that liability not only falls to the city, but we're trying to protect the officers from that. That's really why I'm speaking out. The officers are the ones getting forced to make this decision. And I think I need to point out that we're very fortunate here in Fife that this happened at a time where I was at the office. There was people at Raymond Hall. The prosecutor's office was staffed. Typically, officers get forced to make this decision at 2 or 3 in the morning when there's no one to call. And that, again, is not acceptable.
Yeah, well, not that it changed the outcome. I mean, the chief of police can freaking call over there and say, hey, here's the situation. They're still not. I mean, is it within their capacity to make an exception? Because it seems like based on your conversation with them, because they kind of said, well, they didn't provide us with everything we would needed, but we would need to do an override. But it sounds like that means they could technically do an override.
They say they have an override system in place. To date, I have not seen or heard of anyone successfully using that.
Well, if it's not the robbery suspect who's got an ankle monitor on, who's still allegedly punching her mom in the face, I don't really know what would lead to them making an override. So we're very curious to, and hopefully the conversation goes well for you guys with the presiding judge, and you guys can work something out. Now, is any of this pandemic related still, that they stopped doing it at a certain period of time because of the pandemic and just haven't started back up again?
You know, I don't want to misspeak. I've heard a number of different, staffing. Interesting enough, they say they're built to hold 40. Their average capacity is, 24 to 32. I'm not great at math, but seems that there means there's room in the inn there.
Yeah.
They're talking about pandemic. I do think they have a valid concern that they are housing a large number of very violent offenders, homicide suspects, robbery suspects. And they do reasonably need to keep those people separated. So I can't appreciate that. But again, that's what they exist for. That's what they're built for.
Yeah. Gosh, that's all interesting. I mean, I know in King County, for the Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention, I mean, those policies are kind of coming down from Dow Constantine, who, is a politician. And so we'll look into it. I'm very curious who ultimately is the decider on whether they change that policy or not, because I'm just not familiar with it in Pierce County. Well, Chief, we appreciate you speaking out about this, and we'll follow it and see if there's any positive developments.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I can tell you who's not making that decision. Current Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer would never stand for that. And I'll tell you that that's another important race, man. If you don't want Pierce County to become King County, you got to vote for Kelly Chambers. You got to vote for Kelly Chambers. Ryan Mello is a Seattle-type progressive, and those are the types of policies that he would push. So we look forward to hearing what comes out of the meeting that he's having about this. Because again, I mean, if you care about nothing else, the liability that must expose the county to, if they reject a DV booking, and then this kid goes and kills his dad or something. Because, I mean, adults don't get to, there's no choice with adults. You've got to arrest someone, they've got to be booked, etc. All right, we talked earlier this week about a story out of Island County, Washington, that's made national news, where an election observer on the Republican side was told that she could not observe inside the ballot counting room if she did not have a mask on, okay? And so she ends up basically saying, I'm not leaving. So police had to escort her out. Well, the news media has since done some stories saying, well, this is all being taken out of context. There's more to it, except they captured on camera one critical oversight. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so just to reset the story, so there's a woman who's a volunteer for the Island County Republican Party, and as you know, both parties can be in the areas where ballots are being counted in their county so that they can just monitor to see if there's anything fishy going on, just sort of gives people a little better feeling about things, right? So she goes in on a Thursday, there's a sign that says you can't come in if you don't have a mask on, they leave, she decides she's going to come back Monday, and if they want her to leave, then they're going to have to call police to escort her out. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, I'm sorry you have to come to this.
Okay, I am too.
Okay, but I have to take a stand for people.
Okay. Well, you've been asked to leave. I appreciate you leaving your own accord.
Well, I'm not leaving on my own accord here. You guys are escorting me out.
Okay, here we go.
That is not leaving on my own accord here.
All right. Have a good day.
Yeah, so there you have it. So, no, now look, I think reasonable people maybe might be able to disagree on this. The Island County Auditor, Sheila Kreider, was quoted in the Center Square, and she explained why, specifically in their office, when even King County Elections, by the way, we reached out to King County Elections, they say they do not have a mask requirement. So even the most progressive counties don't have one, so why does Island County? She told the Center Square that in the wake of a COVID-19 outbreak at the Election Center back in August, when election workers were conducting a recount in the Lands Commissioner race, several workers got sick. She said, we had 8 people that got sick, so now we're just ensuring everyone is kept safe as a precaution. Okay, well, I mean, you know, again, I think reasonable people could disagree with that, except I want you to watch this Como News story that was done on this whole controversy.
Well, now a cease and desist letter has been filed to get rid of that mask mandate. But elections officials, they say there's more to the story. Kreider said the masks are required because during the August primary, half the staff caught COVID. Not only that, she said masks and gloves can help them safely handle ballots and envelopes. The incident happened a few days later.
This is where she was supposed to be.
Yes.
Watch closely.
But she went in there without a mask.
That's correct.
Okay.
Election Supervisor Michelle Reagan showed us the hallway that Tracy could have stood in to watch the ballot inspection process.
Did you catch that? Did you catch that? In case you didn't, here's a little still shot of that video. What's going on there? What's going on there?
Maybe he has a medical exemption.
It's a maskless man. Maybe a medical exemption.
I don't know.
It's fascinating, though, in this news story where they're like, well, you know, this isn't. It's totally being over-exaggerated. You need to have these masks on because of COVID outbreak. And it also makes handling the ballots safer. And in that news story, they have video of a man who's sitting in there without a mask on. Well, surely if he could be in there without a mask on, even if he has no medical exemption, the ballot observers can absolutely be in there without a mask on. And they even have these little tarps up. You see that? They have the little barriers. So you need the barrier and the mask. Like, are we in the middle of 2020 here? What's going on? So I just found that fascinating. And also that the Como reporter didn't say in that moment, well, why doesn't he have a mask on? Why doesn't he have a mask on? Because that would seem like a very obvious question, right? You're there talking about how we have to have these masks because of COVID. Well, there's video being shown of a dude in there opening ballots with no mask on. I love it. Maybe he does have a medical exemption. The whole thing is just absolutely, utterly hilarious. Oopsies. All right, before we get to some national news and Florida report, Mike Boggs, a retired Seattle police officer, after 30 years, decides to sell his home here, moved to Arizona. Who did he get in touch with to do it? Our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes Jones has been doing this for a long time in this area, and he was able to get Mike out of that home quickly so he could retire to the sunshine.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. He mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah. So now he's down in Arizona. He deserves that after working for the SPD for so long. And I'm really glad that our friend Wes Jones could help him out and that he was satisfied with the service. So Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Joe Biden's out there busy biting babies. I'm just like, poor Kamala Harris, because like Joe Biden's really not helping her at all. He had the garbage comment, which has now eclipsed the whole Puerto Rico is garbage thing, because one came from a president of the United States, the other came from a crass comedian. So somebody help, somebody tell me in the comments genuinely. And Nicole, you love kids. You watch kids. You used to be a nanny.
Yep.
You know, you have a lot of family and friends with kids. Yep. I don't. I'm not around babies all the time. Is biting babies normal? Like, is it normal to just, oh, you're so cute, nibble?
I think that sometimes people can, you can say, oh, I just want to eat them up. And you're like, ah. Or sometimes you'll take a foot and you'll be like, ah. Like, just pretend.
You smell them?
Sure, I will get that. But typically you're related to the baby.
Okay, so you don't bite. You don't typically bite babies that aren't yours.
I would not go to a stranger's baby.
And just be a little...
Let me no. bite your feet.
Reminds me of the chicken. No? Okay. Well, Biden seems to have a proclivity for biting babies. Here's some video of Biden doing just that. Little baby comes up.
I thought this baby was going to give away my costume.
The baby's dressed as a chicken.
I know.
Perfect. Oh, what's happening? Oh, get in there. Oh, so there's a, let me do a screenshot because I don't know if that video actually showed the bite. Maybe it was too far away. Here's the bite. And
lots
there's
of bite.
Lots of bites. Many bites. He really likes biting the toes. So I was curious, like, one of them is a bear toe. That's weird. So I really wanted to give Biden the benefit of the doubt because I don't know. Like, is it maybe old people just like biting babies?
I mean, I get it. It's just bizarre to do as the president of the United States.
Just a little nibble. Well, it's not even just toes. You got a thigh there. You got an arm. One is a socked toe. The other one is unsocked.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel if the president bit my baby.
I'd be like, how about you keep your germs to yourself, yeah. Mr. President?
Oh, my gosh. That's too much. Anyway, I had to laugh at that today. All right. Funny. What do you think? Is Miranda dressed up today or not? Of course she is. She's not going to. Although Miranda didn't fit our political theme per se. Although she said that she's dressed as the very first politicians in the area that would then become Florida. So she made it work. Let's get to our weekly segment, checking in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It's our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Ahoy, matey.
Ahoy.
Are you in that state with Ron DeSantis, who's an existential threat to our democracy?
Yes, the same as pirates.
Shameful. Shameful. I also heard that some of those mega Republicans are voting really early there, and it's not looking good for Democrats.
Yeah, so about 40% of our registered voters have already voted as of Wednesday, so not even counting today or tomorrow. And about a million more Republicans than Democrats have already made it to the polls. So if those numbers keep trending, it looks like Florida will no longer be a swing state.
Wow. So for you, you were part of that early voting, right? I can't do the Bob Ferguson accent for this whole segment, just the beginning.
I was part of the early voting. I am a registered independent party. So I was part of only about 125,000 registered independents that have already voted. And then I think there was about 1.8 million unaffiliated voters so far.
And there's a lot of news outlets that say Florida isn't even considered a swing state this election. Like traditionally it's been a swing state, but swing states can change from time to time. So it would be a real surprise if Florida went blue for Kamala Harris. Okay, so a couple election shenanigans. We've been talking about election shenanigans here. Specifically, I mean, we've got more Democrats. So Democrats losing their ever-loving minds at political yard signs they disagree with. Well, you've got Florida men down there, and you had a Florida man who lost his mind, a Republican, at some people. Were they waving signs, right?
Yeah, there were a couple elderly women waving signs outside of an early voting location up in, I believe, Jacksonville. And it was a young teenager and seven of his friends. The particular kid we're talking about is actually 18, so he was charged and arrested, but he was brandishing a machete at them. And so these two women, of course, called the police, as they should. And both sides have made statements about it, you know, saying the thank you to the police officers for making, you know, swift response and de-escalating the situation, but also just kind of calling into like telling people to stay calm. Like election season's almost over and it's already been such like a high stress environment. So just show up, cast your ballots and go home.
Jesus, I'd rather have my sign taken out of my yard than a machete wielded at me. But yeah, people are absolutely unhinged. So we've had some ballot issues here. I'm sure you heard about the ballot boxes that got lit on fire by a Free Gaza fanatic. And then we've had some other issues with delivery of ballots. So you have a similar story there in Florida.
Yeah, so first of all, when you vote early and vote on election day in person, you fill out your ballot and then you go to this machine that you insert and it scans your ballot. So your ballots get tabulated right then and there in that machine. But those ballots still need to be collected, secured, and delivered to a specific location once those ballots are counted. So there's some volunteers that are in charge of doing that at the end of each day. And Two people were just driving down the road last night and found a ballot box sealed on the side of the road full of ballots. And so they picked it up and delivered, and took a video of themselves from picking it up all the way to the delivery of a police station just to make sure that they weren't charged of any sort of like issue. But the person that was responsible for actually delivering that ballot box was fired. And they basically made a statement just saying like, people already don't have a lot of confidence in the voter system. So things like this, just there's no room for this kind of error at all. And that's why this person was fired from dealing with the rest of the elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think take them out of the election process. If it was truly just an accident oversight, I mean, that's kind of harsh maybe. But I understand the sentiment of when things happen here, like, for instance, we had hundreds of ballots that were never delivered to their voters and to their final destination. So somewhere between the post office and mailboxes, they got lost. And somebody should get fired over that. It's like, how do you lose hundreds of ballots, especially when it's like during the election cycle, USPS, like this is supposed to be their top priority in our state to make sure they get to where they're going with haste. So just stuff like that. And there needs to be accountability and taking it seriously. So, all right. What do you, you're a pirate and what else you got on there? You got a little, I heard you have, might
a pirate.
Have a,
I have a gun.
It's fake though, right?
It is fake.
Okay.
I did take off the little fake notifier on the front just for aesthetic purposes, but I should probably click it back on there before I go out in public later.
Right. All right, Miranda. What's the opposite of ahoy?
I don't know. Shiver me timbers.
Bon voyage. Shiver me timbers. That's all I got. All right. Okay. We'll talk to you later. Happy Halloween.
You too. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
See, Miranda looks all hot in her Halloween costume. I look terrible, and Nicole looks dead. Although somebody said you look very pretty today, Nicole. Apparently, like the trash.
Apparently, pretty good. Nice. Yep.
I got this funny text. I'm not going to say who it is from, but they said your Bob Ferguson was not believable. let me finish it. That's stupid. Your Bob Ferguson was not believable. Too masculine. Too masculine. He's very feminine. Oh, gosh. Okay, what am I doing next? Oh, gotcha. totally lost. We'll do our daily subscriber show poll coming up. Questions, comments, and our closing sanity check. First, we talk to Zach Abraham with Boulder Capital every Thursday about issues related to the economy. Obviously, the election that's coming up is a big deal. The economy is a key issue for voters. But what happens after the election, given the results? I wanted to know whether Zach is dreading one outcome over the other when it comes to economic impacts, specifically economic impacts for your retirement portfolio. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always fun to be here.
Yeah, well, we got to talk about the election, but you said you have something even more important than the election to talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, there's big stories and then there's bigger stories. And we have a championship football game, fourth grade championship football game coming up this Saturday. So, I mean, you know, the election's important, but, you know, this game on Saturday, it casts a long shadow. You know,
you got your priorities right. I'm telling you, what's their mascot on the fourth grade football team? Who are we cheering for?
We are the Seahawks.
Oh,
funny enough.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes. First team in our youth football club to make the championship game in 8 years.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
So we got some business. We got to bring it home.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be thinking about that and then I'll wait to stew on the election till Sunday then.
And here's the deal. If we win and things don't go our way on Tuesday, you know, it's not all bad, right? At least you got the win.
That's true. The youth football team wins, the nation loses, it's still about, you know, it's going to even out, right?
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah, so let's talk about Tuesday. From an economic perspective, you know, I know you're having one of your risk webinars a couple weeks after the election. Is there, from that perspective of people's retirements or the, you know, the short term, long term of the economy, we've had presidents who've been good for the economy. We've had presidents who've been bad for the economy. Is there any outcome that's devastating?
Not immediately. Okay. And quite honestly, not in a way that I think would get most people's attention. Right. Like, meaning when you look at the actions that the federal government has taken and when you look at the actions of the Federal Reserve, what you can sort of think of them doing, right? Let's look at, you know, 15 years of ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, right? Quantitative easing. What you can look at all of these things as is anesthesia. Okay, so the patient never really recovered from 08-09, but they were just loaded up on a ton of anesthesia, right? And so what we used to consider good or bad for the economy, it's really morphed, it's changed, it's evolved to the point where, you know, when we're talking about what's good or bad for the economy, people think about profit margins and stock markets. So I think both will probably continue going up regardless of who's elected. Not for the same reasons, right? But generally speaking, and that's one of the most frustrating things, because of all this money printing, because of all this debt, it's really covering up a lot of the deleterious impacts of a lot of these ridiculous economic policies and ridiculous actions.
Yeah, I wonder what you would say to someone like my mom, who said, you know, we were on a group text and she found out all four of her kids are voting for Donald Trump and she wasn't very happy about that. And she made the point that her 401k has gone up exponentially during Biden-Harris. And so she sees that and she doesn't feel sort of an immediate economic concern. Do you think that that's a valid argument for Harris Biden? Like, oh, my stocks are doing great.
Well, no. I mean, just look at the stock market returns over the last 15 years. I mean, the stocks have done what they've continued to do. And that's because that is more of a reflection of the deficit and out of control spending than anything else. Right? Like I tell people, like, yeah, it's the best stock market that $35 trillion can buy. Yeah. Right? Like, your stocks are doing well. Why? Why are they doing well? Are they doing well for good reasons? No. Right? One of the reasons stocks have done so well over the last 15 years, and even over the last, you know, 4 years in the Biden-Harris deal, is go look at the debt. Like, just go look at the debt, right? Go look at deficits. I mean, this isn't good. And this is, but what I'm saying is, this is one of these, your mother is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. What do you mean the economy isn't doing good? Look at her 401k balance is proof of currency degradation and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Right, that's what it's the proof of. It's the proof of the money supply going up by 40%. Mm-hmm. It's the cause of inflation. It's why your mother's cost of living has never been higher, right? The real question is, has her wealth increased to a level that has offset the increased cost of living? And for the average American, that's no.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just games, but one of the problems I have with that is that those games, now they went on way less under Trump, because he freed up certain parts of the economy and they didn't, bottom line, the economy and the market didn't need as much assistance.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's been a pretty consistent trajectory, and it used to be as easy as pointing, you know, like when Jimmy Carter was doing a lot of what he was doing, the last time we had an inflationary debt kind of thing, the Federal Reserve was not obsessed with equity markets, right? And so the stock market languished. They weren't nearly as concerned about equity markets. And the stock market languishing was part of the alarm bell that went off that told people things were going in the wrong direction. Well, you're at this interesting place, because for the last 40 to 50 years, we've heard debt alarms, right? Yeah. People going, oh, the United States, 40 to 50 years is a long time. People get anesthetized,
yeah,
right? And now they've lost sight of the size of the issue. And I don't think that they've, you know, we know that people right now in America are historically bad at context. Mm-hmm. Right? They're just applying context to anything. And that is especially true in the financial world, because what do you mean things aren't going well? Look at my 401k balance. And then the next question is, well, yeah, but what did it cost you?
Yeah.
Right? And like I said, it's the best economy and it's the best stock market that $2 trillion deficits and $36 trillion in debt can buy you.
Yeah, well, you're right about people not wanting context. I mean, they won't look at something in context that happened yesterday. So just to end with this simple question, scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not worried at all, 10 being very worried. How worried are you about the results on Tuesday?
Oof. Probably, I'm not a worry person. I think my faith has a lot to do with that. But realistically, 9 to 10.
Yeah, me too.
9 to 10, just because... because it's not that I don't think that we'll have a chance to win an election after that. It's that on so many levels, we're approaching places we can't come back from.
Amen.
And that's what scares me.
I agree. Well, so we'll see you on the back end. We'll know who the next president's going to be, and we'll have a little chat about it next Thursday, okay?
We'll also know who the fourth grade champion is, too.
Oh, my God. More importantly, I'm sorry. Well, no. I need a text right after that game. I can't wait. You want me to wait till next Thursday to find that out? Yeah. Absolutely not.
And just so people know, I'm not being flippant about it, but, you know, life goes on, and you got to stay positive and – you know, but yeah, I'm really worried.
Yeah. Humor is important to stop us from this all from being soul crushing for us. So Zach Abraham, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Fun as always.
Yeah, I'm worried too. And Zach is having one of his Know Your Risk webinars, totally free live webinars after the election. So if you're also concerned about what it means for you, your family, the economy, cost of goods and services, all of that stuff, make sure to sign up for that. It's totally free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. It's on November 21st at 3:30 p.m. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Truck Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. Any references to performance of securities are thought to be materially accurate, and actual performances may differ. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24308. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll and then into your funny comments today. I had to ask you guys because we have had a couple issues with ballots, and the turnout is trending lower, and I don't know if that's because things are delayed or whatever it is. I can't imagine that turnout's going to be lower than 2020. That would shock me, given how much is at stake. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, have you checked the status of your ballot at votewa.gov? We've been telling you to. Votewa.gov. Please, God, tell me you've checked the status of your ballot. Let's see what folks are saying over on Patreon. 82% say, yes, I have checked it. 18% say no. I'd like to get that to 100%. But Nicole says, I haven't, but it's on the top of my to-do list. Dave said, yep, I checked. It's counted. One more vote to vote yes, pay less. 100%. Slim Jakey says, my vote was rejected for the signature. I fixed it online. King County called me last night and they fixed it, but the internal tracking isn't updating. Had a fun conversation with the King County girl on the line. Well, I'm glad you rectified that and that they reached out to you. Opal, yes, my husband and I just checked and our ballots have been accepted. Thank you, Brandy, for the nudge. Yes, we just want to make sure. If you went through the trouble of voting, I want your vote to count. E said, handed mine to a USPS human on camera. It was received, accepted, and counted within 48 hours. I love that. Joel says, we need to be more vigilant than ever. GTB do says, not yet. Mailed it yesterday. Yeah, so I would probably check today or over the weekend. I mean, God, you got to be getting those ballots in. So if you haven't done it already, don't wait to the last moment, especially with some of these issues that we've been having with ballots getting to where they need to go, like over in Whitcomb. Oh, is it Whitcomb County? Is it Whitcomb? Spokane County? Whitcomb. Whitcomb. No. Is that what it's called?
The one that they were missing?
Yeah.
Whitcomb.
Whitman, not Whitcomb.
Yes.
Whitman County. I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Similar over on Locals saying 86% saying they have tracked it, 13% saying no. Gabe said, had to call as the website had no record of me. Both state and county staff, very gracious. My birth date was off by 2 decades. King County did confirm ballot received and counted. That's good that you checked, for sure. That would have freaked me out if I plugged in my information. They had no record of me. All right, comments. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Brandy, apparently the ACLU is suing Ann Davison's office to prevent ACAs from using, assistant city attorneys, from using affidavits of prejudice to disqualify activist Judge Vidotti from hearing certain criminal cases. Hopefully the ACLU suit fails. We'll have to look into that. I hadn't heard that. Crafty Grandma Crispy, $5 super chat. Have you heard the good news? Only 5 more days until the cessation of political ads. If there's any win, that's it. We don't have to watch these stupid ads anymore. Kathy Carr, I don't see the connection between Ferguson and a pawn. My hint yesterday was a pawn. First of all, did you not know Ferguson is a chess grandmaster, allegedly? Something like that? He's like a master chess player. And we're all just pawns in his pursuit of power. So that's why I specifically chose the pawn. We're all pawns in his pursuit of power. Gun 4747 Esquire, your haircut is too good. Ferguson's looks like it was done with a weed whacker. People are saying I look like Harry Potter.
Well, it's just the glasses, right?
Harry Potter has round glasses.
Yeah.
But it doesn't even look like Harry Potter at all. There were some funny leftists.
The hair is pretty similar to
there
Harry.
There were some leftists who were big mad. They said, oh, you look like Harry Potter. And that means basically that you're supporting transphobe J.K. Rowling. I'm like, you guys are so unhinged. Imagine really being that unhinged. Nancy says, don't squeak the chicken anymore. My dog is going nuts. Don't do it.
It's funny because my cats kind of went a little crazy when I squeezed that yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Too,
well, yeah.
Which I've never, they don't go crazy over much.
Oh, if I squeezed that for my dogs, they'd lose their minds. They love That's the funny. Squeaker toys. And Matt says, because this wig is so irritating.
Itchy.
Matt says, the wig is just like Ferguson, agitating. Just rock on Biden biting babies. I don't even like when a stranger reaches out to pat my baby, let alone a full-on disgusting mouth being put on my baby. That's horrendously inappropriate. Charlie K, well, some will admit there is a waste problem with Puerto Rico, and this was a joke, not necessarily referring to the people by a comedian. The president's garbage was directed Trump voters. 100%. There's no comparing the two of them. One was a comedian. One is the president of the United States, who's supposed to serve people, saying like half the country's garbage.
And his little cover up for it.
Oh my God.
Does not work.
We should have played that. Karine Jean-Pierre came out and said, oh no, the president released a statement talking about what he meant. He meant this garbage comedian. That's not what he said. It's literally not what he said.
I love the garbage truck stunt yesterday though.
And oh did my God, you, Trump did you driving hear? A garbage truck.
Did you hear him explain it in the speech
yeah.
too?
He
that
was so
hysterical.
Funny. Well, then he was talking about how he had this like, sorry, my wig is awful. He had this orange, vest. What do you call it? Safety vest on. And he said he didn't want to wear it on stage, but somebody, one of his staff told him it made him look skinny. So he's like, I'm wearing it. I'm going to wear it all the time.
But I love he's like, they asked him on the plane if he would drive the garbage truck. And by the time he landed and got there, they already had the Make America Great Trump sign on it. Even he was surprised.
It
he's
was
like, I don't know how they did it so fast.
I know. It was like a last minute thing.
And
too
it was
funny.
A brand new garbage truck, a fancy garbage truck.
It was too good.
It was perfect.
Expert trolling. Deanna Sanderson, I'm wearing my Common Sense 2024 shirt at work today. I customized the back with Vote Yes, Pay Less on all WA initiatives and listed their numbers. I love it. I should have put this on the show today, but did you see what Vijay Boyapati posted? He carved a pumpkin that said Vote Yes on 2109 and put it on his doorstep, which I love. That's a great way to reach. I'm wondering if I should keep my Bob Ferguson costume on for the trick-or-treaters tonight. Maybe add a Dave Reichert for governor pin or something.
I think you should walk around when people are like, who are you? Be like, Bob Ferguson, don't vote for me.
Power-hungry Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Lisa, thank you, Chief Fisher, for discussing this issue that residents in Pierce County have been pointing out for a couple years now, the lack of accountability for juvenile offenders. Rick Johnson, 8 of the 9 current Supreme Court justices have endorsed Sal Mungia. Inappropriate. I agree. They want complete unanimity on the state Supreme Court, which is horrifying. That is so horrifying. Mm-hmm. We cannot vote for that guy. I don't know anything about him. It's not about that. It's about him having the support of the party in power. And that's exactly what we don't need for a state Supreme Court justice. Jenny Goff, very funny opening. And my last name is Goff. Thank goodness I wasn't born a boy. Me dressing as orgasmic drag king, Jack King Goff, would have been pretty funny.
Although it would have been another round of triggered.
The news would have done Cairo 7 would have done another story on me.
You bully.
Sandy Johnson, flat costumes are beyond wonderful. You two are extra special. I love the creativity of yours, Nicole. You could have just been a chicken check. Instead, you're a dead person who got a chicken check.
Who got a chicken check.
God, that's genius.
Thank you.
That is absolutely.
I try to get creative with my Halloween costumes.
That's so creative.
Back in the day. Oh, sorry. Some of my best ones. I was also a dead person from Titanic when that movie was big. So it was
that's
a similar.
Kind of sad.
I know it's kind of sad, but I mean, the movie was big and that was a thing. And then Lindsay Lohan in jail when she was back in jail.
Oh, okay.
Like I was her in jail. And then I was an Eskimo for Sarah Palin. So
I wore a Sarah Palin thing,
but I was an Eskimo. So I try to get creative.
Yeah. No, I like all of those. I like this one's really good. And Nicole was like, she was looking for face makeup at the last minute because she wanted to make her face look more dead. I was like, you can just use my makeup.
You're pretty pale.
It's light enough. Just use my pale makeup. Do you notice the attention I paid to my thin? I put little thin little bird lips.
Bird lips. We'll do a side by side. We'll have to post
this
side by side.
But I really do.
Your poor forehead looks red. And
I tried to make him look pointy.
Yeah. You know,
pointy.
I like it.
Anyway, that's about it. Sandy costumes beyond wonderful. You two are extra special. I think I just read that, but I already forgot. So should we get to our closing sanity check? It's going to be a big week next week. Big week next week. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. I don't have anything funny or quippy or any flashy video to play. I just want to remind everyone to get your ballots in. Next week is going to be a consequential week, regardless of the outcome. We have a lot of important things happening locally. I know some people feel like, oh, my vote isn't going to count. We've tried so many times. Nothing ever changes. Look, there are going to be some disappointments on Tuesday. That is an absolute certainty. But I think there are also going to be some surprises. And when you've had a state that has voted the same way for 40 years, that's a very hard thing to unwind. So we have to take the little wins where we can. And no matter what the outcome is on Tuesday, we have to keep up the momentum that I have really seen over the last year. I mean, the momentum is undeniable. And you can see that in how freaked out the party in power is and how much money they're spending and how hard they're working to vilify some of our efforts. So the only thing you can do, the very best thing you can do, is vote. Talk to your friends and family, especially in some of those key races that are nonpartisan, where they might have a hard time making up their mind. And then, of course, make sure to check the status of your ballot to make sure it was accepted. But don't wait any longer. Get your ballot in this weekend. Ballot drop box, USPS, whatever it is, and then votewa.gov to check the status of that ballot. Let's return sanity to Washington State through democracy. All right.
You know what I forgot?
What?
Because I'm wearing the headphones, you can't see my fish.
Your dead earrings. Fish?
Yeah, my dead fish earrings.
Man.
And then, like, here's my tuna.
And your gray
hair. My chicken of the sea.
Your gray hair was all in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. We'll get some pics.
Anyway, I just wanted the full effect there. I forgot. I spent a lot of money on these earrings, actually. Kind of ridiculous.
That's a perfectly good reason to interrupt my powerful closing,
Nicole. I
thought
so.
Thank you.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Just a couple more minutes of costume.
Just a couple more minutes of costume. All right, we appreciate all of you. So just a couple housekeeping things as we wrap up. We are going to have our regular Sundays with subscribers, but on Sunday we're having an exclusive election preview live Sunday evening Q&A for subscribers. So that'll be 8 p.m. Sunday evening. I've already posted about it on the subscription platform, so it's a good one to join, and you can sign up to be a subscriber and join us for that on Sunday. And then, of course, Monday will be election. Tuesday, we'll do our regular show, and then we will be broadcasting live on location as the results come in at 8 p.m. Tuesday evening. So if you have not signed up to support our show, we sure would appreciate it. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. It's just $5 a month. It helps make sure Nicole and I can continue to do this job full time and bring you all these important stories. Fun costumes, help me pay for the cost of my Bob Ferguson wig. That would be appreciated.
Can't believe we have to wait another year to do this again.
I know. What are we going to do next year? We got to one up ourselves. All right, you guys, have a fantastic Halloween. I hope you enjoy it. Subscribers, we'll see you on Sunday. And then let's all get some rest and relaxation this weekend ahead of what is going to be an emotionally draining or exciting week next week. Okay, talk to you later.